tight.
He slid his backpack to the ground, removing his canteen and belt knife. Then he unbuckled his gun belt and took off the ammo pouch.
I'm gonna need every inch to get down that.
What a feel with crabs. Trapped with no help, no light. Candle's iffy.
Here, this will help.
Mildred rummaged in her med kit to extract a small flashlight. She squeezed the handle on the side of the device several times to charge the ancient batteries and flicked the switch. The light was weak, but still serviceable. Dean accepted the flashlight and tucked it into his shirt for safekeeping. Then he double-checked his blaster, making sure there was a round under the hammer for instant use.
You see or hear any of the blues, get out of there fast. Just cut and run.
The boy nodded in agreement, his thoughts private.
Now, lad, there should be plenty of ropes and tackle near the base of the tower, along with torches and cork jackets to rescue people from drowning. Just toss a line over the balcony, and we shall climb up.
I gotcha.
Dean climbed onto the pile of rubble and carefully slid his legs into the brick-lined darkness. He wiggled back and forth a bit, going lower with each move, until his hips passed the top of the flue, and he unexpectedly dropped. JB and Jack both snatched a wrist, but Dean had already stopped himself by grabbing the top layer of bricks.
Thanks.
He shifted his stance in the flue until his boots were more solidly braced on the rough surface.
I'm okay now.
The adults released the boy, and he started into the darkness once more. The rest of the companions backed away from the hole to allow the greatest amount of the dying sunlight to illuminate his way. In only a few moments, he was gone from sight.
How you doing?
Busy!
Long minutes passed, with only the sound of the surf and the breeze disturbing the peaceful oceanfront peninsula. Overhead, the always-present storm clouds began to darken as the setting sun drained all color from the world, the shadows growing long and thick. Doc and Jack began to gather driftwood into a pile for a campfire.
How much longer do we give him?
JB scowled.
As long as it takes. We don't have a way to go down there and check on him.
Good thing there is no sign of those accursed PT boats. At present, we are prepared neither to wage war nor to retreat.
Got that right. I'm down to 10 rounds.
Feeling uneasy, JB unfolded the wire stock on the Uzi.
What did Jones call the Baron again?
Kennison.
Jack whittled on a piece of wood with a knife as he answered. The pile of tinder grew steadily under his adroit ministrations.
Called him Lord Bastard, too.
Suddenly, a sharp whistle sounded twice from the weeds and stunted brush growing inland, and the companions dropped into combat positions, taking cover behind the bricks. Working the bolt on his machine pistol, JB replied to the call with one long whistle. Answered by the same, everybody relaxed as Ryan and Christy rose into view, holstering their blasters. Mildred rushed forward and knelt to probe Ryan's wounded leg.
You're hurt.
The Deathlands warrior inhaled sharply at the contact of her fingers.
Just a scratch. I got the poison out and cauterized the hole.
Maybe, maybe not. Better let me be the judge of that.
The physician untied the torn pieces of cloth. Closely, she looked over the puckered scar, shiny and new among many older ones.
Well?
Mildred tied the strips of cloth closed again.
It's clean enough, and thankfully not infected, but it must hurt like hell.
Pain means you're still alive.
He glanced around.
Where's Dean? On patrol?
Jack jerked a thumb.
Down chimney. Find the door for lighthouse.
His face a stone mask, Ryan limped to the pile of bricks and looked down the hole. He whistled sharply and waited, but there was no response.
Any other way inside?
None that we could find. Lighthouse has got solid granite walls. Need a C4 satchel charge to even dent the place.
As Ryan limped over to the lighthouse, Doc started to offer the man his ebony stick, then thought better of the gesture. Ryan would never take it. Not from foolish macho pride, but with one of them possibly in danger, the man wouldn't have the time to spare thinking about his own pain. In the New York Herald of his day, Doc sometimes read of officers whose troopers claimed they would charge with them straight into hell. The scholar had never met such a person until Ryan freed him from that slave pit so very long ago. Another small crab scuttled by, and Jack caught the mutie in his hand, keeping well clear of the scorpion tails.
Wonder if good eat.
The eye stalks of the creature extended fully, and it stared at the albino as if in open hatred. It unnerved him slightly how much intelligence there seemed to be in its steady expression. Christie pointed to the east.
There's an oyster bed in a tide pool some 100 yards that way with enough to feed an army.
Excellent, madam. Exemplary.
Doc lifted an imaginary hat to the red-headed woman.
Once more, you are the source of our succor.
Jack tossed the crab away, uncaring where it landed. The mutie hit the beach on its back just in time for a wave to flip it over, and it hastily disappeared into the briny foam.
I feel sack.
Jack took off at a run.
Speaking of which...
J.B. walked over to a slab of bare rock and lifted up a canvas bag.
Here are your backpacks. They washed ashore near us a couple miles down the beach.
Christie took them both and passed one to Ryan. The packs were torn in spots, probably from coral reefs, and still damp from the ocean, but were still okay. Easing the long blaster free from the tangled straps, Ryan briefly checked the Steyr SSG-70 sniper rifle for damage. He worked the bolt a few times to make sure sand and salt hadn't gummed the works. The carriage moved smoothly, chambering a 7.62mm brass round from the transparent plastic clip. He slid the weapon over his shoulder.
Some sand in the barrel, but no blockage.
He had actually felt off balance with the long blaster gone. Going through the backpack, he used his big hands to squeeze excess moisture from the stiff canvas. Everything inside smelled dank, especially the dog hair socks, but nothing seemed seriously damaged. Satisfied for the moment, Ryan stuffed some more rotary clips for the Steyr into his jacket pocket and filled the ammo pouch on his belt with clips for the Sig Sauer. He was still very low on ammo, but better armed now than he was before. Closing her backpack, Christie tossed away a handful of soggy mush that had once been dried fish, wrapped carefully in banana leaves. The sagging glob of food smelled rancid, and she heaved it into the weeds. Immediately, insects began to converge on the unexpected bounty.
Any idea where we might be?
Got no idea which island this is.
JB touched the mini-sextant hanging around his neck.
The sun has been behind clouds since I woke up. Never once got a chance to fix our position. This doesn't look like Spider Island, though. Too barren. No mountains.
But the woman barely heard the man's reply. Her hair wildly flexing, Christie was listening to the wind. What was that odd sound? It was like hard rain hitting a tin roof, only lower, softer. How odd.
Well, we can't be too far away. Without a raft of some kind, we couldn't have stayed afloat in the water for very long, even if the currents were with us.
Ryan started to explain about the dead spider when a pistol shot rang out, and Jack burst into view over the low sand dune. He paused at the crest to fire two more rounds, then raced toward the companions.
Crabs!
Just then, a horrible blanket of blues swarmed over the dune, their armored bodies covering the ground for yards.
Kill them all!
Ryan slid the Steyr SSG-70 off his shoulder and worked the bolt. They were the big crabs from the spider carcass. They had to have been following him and Christie to see if they could find more people. And he had led them right here. Snarling in fury, Ryan fired and a blue exploded, spraying its guts over a dozen others. But the rest of the pack kept coming. And even as Ryan fired again, chilling another, he already knew there were a hell of a lot more crabs than they had ammo.
Bastards are enormous!
JB fired short bursts from the Uzi. The 9mm rounds wreaked havoc along the front ranks, but even as they fell, the others scuttled callously over their fallen brethren. As the rest of the companions opened fire with their blasters, spent brass flying everywhere, Doc slid the ebony stick into his belt, drew the Lama, and set the selector pin from the shotgun round to the .44 cylinder. Cocking the huge hammer, Doc began firing point-blank at the nearest crabs. A lance of flame stabbed through the billowing black cloud that thundered from the maw of the huge weapon. A 3-foot-wide crab literally exploded under the trip-hammer arrival of the .44 mini-ball. Then there came the musical twang of a ricochet from an outcropping near the chimney. Doc savagely grinned and dropped flat to the ground to fire again. The solid lead mini-ball plowed through the first crab, blowing the shell off its body, and continued on to chill two more. Then one of the small pale blue crabs darted for his face, and Doc scrambled to his feet, only to find the tiny mutie clinging to his silvery locks with its pincers, while its scorpion tails probed for his eyes. He slapped his weapon at the crab, and there was a sharp tink as a barbed tail bounced off the steel barrel.
Damn it!
Hold still!
With lightning speed, Mildred sliced off a chunk of the man's hair with a knife. The crab landed among the boots of the companions and was stomped in a